March 12th, 2010, in Vrindavan, Bhagavad Gita.
Is everybody on our six
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Thank you. Paramahamsa Parivrajika Acharya Asatara Satashree Srimadis Devangai Sesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Iskand Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shri Gaurishri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Sharma Kunda Radha Kunda Giddi Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamai Jumuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaurani Pachani Nivasesa Samirani Paskatyade Satyane Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Uttamaparamanam Sri Guru Vaishnavamstra Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsajimam Sadvatam Sagradutam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Devi Sri Radha Krishna Padukam Sagana Malita Sri Vishakam Vitamstra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 6. Ajopi sana yayatma Bhutana mishvaropi san Prakritin swamadistaya Sambhavam yatma mayaya.
Ajopi sana yayatma Bhutanam ishvaro api san
Bhutanam ishvaro api san
Prakritim swamadhisthaya
Prakritim swamadhisthaya
Sambhavami atmaya
Sambhavami atmaya
Ajopi sana yayatma
Ajopi sana yayatma Bhutanam ishvaro api san
deterioration.
Atma.
Body.
Bhutanam.
Of all those who are born.
Of all those who are born.
Ishvara,
the Supreme Lord,
the Supreme Lord.
Api,
although
Sun,
being so,
Prakritim,
in the transcendental form, Swam,
of myself,
Adhisthaya,
being so situated,
Sambhavami,
I do incarnate,
Atmamayaya,
by my
internal
energy.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. So again, this is an answer to Arjuna's question. Because Krishna told Arjuna that he had taught this science to the sun god. And Arjuna said, how did you do that? How is that possible? Someone asked me the other day, can I ask my spiritual master questions of my doubts? I said, not only can you, that is required. So Arjuna is asking this question, how is that possible? So Krishna is answering it, and this is part of his answer. The personality of Godhead said, I'm sorry, that's the previous verse. Although I am unborn, and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. Okay, so Krishna said three things about himself. What were they?
Unborn.
Body never deteriorates, and he's the controller, but still he appears in his form. So that way his birth is not ordinary. He's the Ishvara, right? We have the word here. Ishvara. Bhutanam Ishvaropi Sam. A Bhutanam. Of all the living entities, I am the Ishvara. Prakritim Swam Adhisthaya. Adhisthaya means place. Adhisthaya. I still stay in my own place. I haven't changed my position. Like we have the word Nishta, meaning fixed. As Swam, my own. Sambhavami. Bhava means nature. Sambhava, my own nature. Atmamaya, by my own energy. And Ajo, unborn. Purport. The Lord has spoken about the peculiarity of his birth. Because the previous verse, he said, we've taken verse together and I remember them, but you don't. You might say, well, how is that? If we've taken verse together, then why don't you forget them just like I have? So the peculiarity of his birth. Although he may appear like an ordinary person, he remembers everything of his many, many past quote-unquote births. Whereas a common man cannot remember what he has done even a few hours before. If someone is asked what he did exactly at the same time one day earlier, it would be very difficult for a common man to answer immediately. So we can test this. So 5:45 at night, yesterday was Thursday, Kadasi. How are we doing exactly at 5:45? We were sitting here listening to the class, okay. He would surely have to dredge his memory to recall what he was doing exactly at the same time one day before. So we could might say in general, I was listening to the class, or I was chanting, or I was at Keshi Ghat, and I was working on my computer, but exactly what was I doing? I don't know. I don't remember. You have to dredge his memory. You all know the word dredge? Like sometimes the people are cleaning out the sewers here, they're dredging in the sewers. And yet, men often dare claim to be God or Krishna. One should not be misled by such meaningless claims. I was speaking at a home program in London some time ago, and I had been told in advance that some of the people there were followers of one such person like that. And at the end of my class, someone asked me, what are the qualities of a saintly person? So I was explaining from Bhagavad Gita. And they said, well, how do you know who is God? And the first thing I said was, well, he's the most beautiful. I was told afterwards some of them left the following that particular person. So if you say, I am God, but yet you can't remember, what did you do exactly 5:46 yesterday? How can you be God? It's very difficult to remember what I did exactly an hour ago today. What exactly was I doing? That's difficult. What to speak of what I was doing years ago? I tell this to families whenever they're arguing about something. I say, you know, you're having a big argument now, and 5 years from now, you probably will not remember what is the subject matter of your argument. You might remember, oh, I had an argument. What were we arguing about? I don't remember anymore. This seems so important. And yet we think, I'm God. Meaningless claims, Prabhupada says. Then again, the Lord explains, so first thing Prabhupada said that makes Krishna special is that he can remember. I just think Krishna is not only remembering everything he's ever done in all of his incarnations, he remembers everything all of us have done. Right? And not only us, how many of us are there in this room? 30 maybe. But to speak of all the living entities, if we just think of how many human beings are just in a square kilometer here, and if any of us had to keep track of that many people, it would be very, very difficult. Very difficult. If you have some business, you know, and there's 100 people, 1,000 people in your business to remember what everybody's doing. And not just all the people, but what to speak of all the dogs and the monkeys and then all the blades of grass. And Krishna remembers everything that every living entity has ever done. Okay, so that's Prabhupada's first point, is that Krishna always remembers. Then again, the Lord explains his prakriti, or his form. Prakriti means nature, as well as swarupa, or one's own form. So here Prabhupada is saying the prakriti in this connection means the same as swarupa, your nature. Just like we speak about ourselves, we'll say, oh, that's just my nature, isn't it? I was working with one devotee a while ago who had some annoying habits. And I said to her, maybe you can change this. And she said, no, it's just my nature. No, it's my nature to be annoying. So we have our nature. Some of us are more quiet. We never raise our hand, you know. Someone calls in, put our hand. Some people are more outgoing. Some people like challenges. Some people like things that are easy. Some people are very careful. Some people are risk takers. We have our nature. So Krishna also has his nature. It's his prakriti. The Lord said that he appears in his own body. He does not change his body, as the common living entity changes from one body to another. The conditioned soul may have one kind of body in the present birth, but it's a different body in the next birth. In the material world, the living entity has no fixed body, but transmigrates from one body to another. The Lord, however, does not do so. So this is explained, of course, in the 15th chapter. How the living entity is carrying his conceptions of life, just like the air is carrying aromas. We get particular desires, particular associations that form our subtle body. Our subtle body is also always changing. Right? And just like even in this life, some people are always meditating on their dog and they start to look like their dog. You've seen these contests? Look like your dog contests. And then you get a gross body, Krishna says, then you get the senses are grouped around the mind. So we're changing our identity one life to the next. Even in this life, Virajan Prabhu was saying to me this morning, he said, well, I've had so many incarnations in this life. I was a Gurukul teacher, then I was a this kind of teacher, then I was a this kind of... Isn't it? So sometimes for 10 years we're a cook, and then for 10 years we're a book distributor, and then for 10 years we're a pujari. Our sense of self changes. What to speak of from one life to the next. So in this life we're thinking, oh, I'm a, you know, a Czech man. And next life you're thinking, oh, I'm a Chinese lady. I'm this kind of person. I'm that kind of person. Always changing our identity, just like some actor on the stage. The really good actors, actresses, they take on the persona of the person that they're playing. They enter into that character. Prabhupada says just like that. We're entering into a particular character, trying on different roles. Right? But Krishna is not changing his body like that. He says, the Lord, however, does not do so. Whenever he appears, he does so in the same original body by his internal potency. Atma Maya, as Prabhupada is referring to. In other words, Krishna appears in this material world in his original eternal form with two hands holding a flute. He appears exactly in his eternal body, uncontaminated by this material world. So that's the second thing, is that Krishna is not changing. He's not appearing in a body. He's not entering into a body. This body is like a costume we're putting on. So Krishna is not putting on a costume. He's coming as he is. Although he appears in the same transcendental body and is Lord of the universe, so this is referring to Bhutanam Ishvaropisam, still it appears that he takes his birth like an ordinary living entity. So it appears like that. Devaki's pregnant and she gives birth and she has a baby. So most people in general, they're thinking, okay, here this is father is Vasudev, his mother is Devaki. She has a baby in her womb, she gives birth, and the baby's there. So it appears like that. And although his body does not deteriorate like a material body, it still appears that Lord Krishna grows from childhood to boyhood and from boyhood to youth. So not only does he appear to be born, he also appears to grow up. These are the changes mentioned for the material body, isn't it? Birth and growth, producing byproducts. So Krishna appears to have these manifestations of someone in a material body. But astonishingly enough, he never ages beyond youth. At the time of the Battle of Kurukshetra, he had many grandchildren at home, or in other words, he had sufficiently aged by material calculations. Still, he looked just like a young man 20 or 25 years old. We never see a picture of Krishna in old age, because he never grows old like us. Although he is the oldest person in the whole creation, past, present, and future. Neither his body nor his intelligence ever deteriorates or changes. So this is the next point. So first point was that he always remembers. Next point is that he appears in his own body, his own self. Actually, Krishna, his body, himself, his mind, it's all the same. It's not this duality. You know, I have this, I'm myself, and then I've got the subtle body, and then I've got the gross body. And this next thing is that Krishna never changes. So how is it that Krishna appears to grow up? I mean, he appears to grow up, right? We read about in Vrindavan, he's this little baby, Mother Yasoda's feeding him her breast milk, and she looks in his mouth and she sees the little teeth. And she saw, oh, my baby's getting his teeth. Of course, sometimes when she looks at his teeth, what does she see? The whole universe. There's much more than just teeth in there. But she sees little teeth. And then he starts to turn over. When little babies are first born, they can't turn over. And he starts to turn over, and they have a festival for the first time he turns over. And then he's crawling, and he's walking. And said that Mother Yasoda, Mother Mohini, they're so happy to see their children grow. And he's speaking in broken language and carrying Nandamarja's shoes on his head. And sometimes Nandamarja asks him to pick up something heavy, and he just moves his arms because he's too heavy for him to pick up. And then he gets a little older and he's taking care of the calves, and then he gets a little older, he gets to 6 years old, and there's Gopastami, he's taking care of the cows. So what does Prabhupada mean that his body never changes? Any ideas? What does this mean?
Someone's got the same clothes, eh?
Hmm?
Someone's got the same clothes, they also.
I'm sorry?
It's always got the same potency all the time.
All the same potency all the time. Right, because normally for us, when we have a little baby body, we don't have practically any potency. Isn't it? We have, practically speaking, no potency, no abilities. Same potency. Any other thoughts? What does it mean Krishna's body doesn't change?
It's not forced. It's forced to change.
It's not forced. It's changing because it's apparently changing because of his moods. Just like even the Lord's different incarnations. Nisingadev. This morning we were talking in class, right? About Nisingadev. Singadev, Varaha, they appear to be quite changed, isn't it? And Prabhupada's saying here, Krishna appears with two hands playing a flute, but sometimes he appears as a boar, yes?
Krishna's body is eternal.
It's eternal. So what does it mean? Eternally it doesn't change, but it appears to change. How can you explain this contradiction?
It is by his internal potency of mind.
Only internal potency, yes. So he's always complete. Okay? Other thoughts?
I heard that the spiritual body can change according to the mood.
Ah. Well, we see that. We see that when he gets very angry, he appears as Nisingadev. Right? When he wants to play in the mud at the bottom of the universe, he appears as Varaha. And according to his mood. So he does manifest differently. So what do we mean that it's not changing? It looks like it's changing. How do we say it's not changing? Same potency you said, always complete. What else? So the apparent change is just for rasa. So this is these two things that we're always holding. Rasa and tattva. For rasa, Krishna has so many appearances of yogamaya, isn't it? But at any time, just like there's different pastimes that Krishna is appearing as a baby, and then he also appears as his as a youth, and then again he appears as a baby, depending on to whom he's interacting, what is the mood. So this is the mystery. The impersonalist cannot understand this. The impersonalist think God is changeless must mean that he's boring. Everything's always the same. Therefore, you find that most people who preach impersonalistic philosophy live materialistic lives. There are very few real impersonalists. Because impersonalism is boring. Right? You know, so many people today, they preach some impersonal philosophy, but they don't usually live like that. Few. But most people don't. Because why are you going to just be the same all the time? Just nothing ever changes. Even if you're in a very nice place, you want some variety, isn't it? Everybody wants some variety. So that Krishna is changeless. He's always the same. And yet, there's variety. Another way though, another change we can say, is that Krishna is always expanding. Prabhupada says in other places, not here, but other places he said that Krishna is always expanding. And that Krishna expands, then his knowledge of himself expands. So that also from our perspective is a kind of change, isn't it? But yet we say it's changeless. Neither his body nor his intelligence ever deteriorates or changes. Therefore, it is clear that in spite of his being in the material world, he is the same unborn, eternal form of bliss and knowledge, changeless in his transcendental body and intelligence. Factually, his appearance and disappearance are like the sun's rising, moving before us and then disappearing from our eyesight. When the sun is out of sight, we think that the sun is set. And when the sun is before our eyes, we think that the sun is on the horizon. Actually, the sun is always in its fixed position, but owing to our defective, insufficient senses, we calculate the appearance and disappearance of the sun in the sky. So here Prabhupada's giving an analogy. Of course, analogies are never completely the same. But the analogy is it appears to us that the sun is changing. Now it's in this part of the sky, now it's in that part of the sky, different seasons, it's in different areas. Right? But it's simply we're changing our position in relationship to the sun. And even the sun can appear larger when it's rising, or different colors, or things like that. And because Lord Krishna's appearance and disappearance are completely different from that of an ordinary common living entity, it is evident that he is eternal, blissful knowledge by his internal potency, and he is never contaminated by material nature. The Vedas also confirm that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unborn, yet he still appears to take his birth in multi-manifestations. The Vedic supplementary literatures also confirm that even though the Lord appears to be taking birth, he is still without change of body. In the Bhagavatam, he appears before his mother as Narayana, with four hands and the decoration of the six kinds of full opulences. His appearance in his original eternal form is his causeless mercy. So now Prabhupada's switching to another topic. He's looking at the Sanskrit here, Atma Maya, because Maya can also mean mercy. His appearance in his original eternal form is his causeless mercy, bestowed upon the living entities so that they can concentrate on the Supreme Lord as he is, and not on mental concoctions or imaginations, which the impersonalists wrongly think the Lord's form to be. So you may ask, well, if the Lord is not changing bodies, if he doesn't have some subtle body full of material desires that's forcing him into a gross body, then why is he coming? Why is he here? Just like devotees go to preach in a prison. And some prisoner may say, well, if you haven't committed any crime, what are you doing here? So here it says he's here by his Atma Maya. The word Maya or Atma Maya refers to the Lord's causeless mercy, according to the Vishvakosha dictionary. The Lord is conscious of all of his previous appearances and disappearances. Now here Prabhupada's summarizing. The Lord is conscious of all of his previous appearances and disappearances, but a common living entity forgets everything about his past body as soon as he gets another body. Isn't it? Any of you here remember your last life? You do? Some people. Some people can. But generally, we don't remember. Generally, we don't. He is the Lord of all living entities. Now, this is referring to the Bhutanam Ishwaram Bhusam. He is the Lord of all living entities because he performs wonderful and superhuman activities while he is on earth. So this is also an indication that it's not an ordinary birth. Therefore, the Lord is always the same absolute truth and is without differentiation between his form and self. So here Prabhupada's making another point. There's no difference between his body and himself, or between his quality and body. A question may now be raised as to why the Lord appears and disappears in this world. This is explained in the next verse. Actually, it's explained in the next two verses. Ajopi san ayayatma bhutanam isharopisam prakritim swamadistaya sambhavam yatmamayaya. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So this verse very much relates to a verse coming up, 4.9. Anybody know 4.9? Janma karma chame divyam eva meo veti tattva yam punar janma naiti mameti. So that verse is saying, janma karma chame divyam, my birth, my appearances are all divine. And if you understand this, then you also can enter into transcendental life. Many times Prabhupada would use that verse to say how easy Krishna consciousness is. It's so easy. If you just understand that Krishna's birth and activities are transcendental, then you can attain the perfection of life. So this verse today, this verse in purport, help us to understand how Krishna is transcendental. What do we mean that Krishna's birth and activities are transcendental? And they give us, we call it grist for the mill. If you're going to grind grain, you have to put some grain in the mill. You don't just grind nothing. So if you're going to meditate on how Krishna is transcendental, you have to have some information upon which to meditate. In all the religious systems of the world, they are teaching that one should love God, or one should think of God, or one should think at least of the spiritual. But how do you think of the spiritual? So here Krishna is giving us some very specific information. So let's see what he's told us here. Krishna's told us that although he appears to be born, and although he appears to grow up, and although he does activities, many of his activities also appear to be like that of ordinary persons. He's taking care of cows. Generally, people take care of cows as a means of livelihood. He gets married. He has children. He's running a kingdom. He's defending the kingdom. That still, he's coming in his original transcendental body. Prabhupada makes the point here that he's born as Vishnu. So every mother wants to have a special child. One devotee lady was just telling me, so I'm planning that my child will be born at this time, and this, you know, on this special day. I said, well, you don't know. But I don't know any mother that can say, except for Devaki, who can say, oh, my child is born with four arms, a full head of hair, and earrings, you know. I mean, Kunti had Karna, who had armor and earrings. That was a little unusual. But we don't see some child born with clothes and jewelry. It never happens. So not an ordinary birth. And Prabhupada also makes the point that he appears, first as fully Vishnu, and not even as a baby, and as full Vishnu. Then, on the request of his parents, he becomes a little baby. And then, although he's apparently growing, he never gets old. So we would all like this. Nobody likes to get old. It's such a big business in the world now, how to pretend you're not getting old. You know, you like stretch your face and color in your hair. Where we're staying, the gentleman who's running the place where I'm staying, you see all the gray hair. You know, he's got black hair with the gray hair. So it's a big business. So many medicines. How can I stay young? Or plastic surgery, so many things. But of course, it doesn't exactly work. You can make the appearance a little different, but the body is falling apart. But Krishna never gets old. We never even see him with a beard, isn't it? You know, he says, like, Prabhupada says here, 20, 25. Usually he says, like, 16 or 20. He always looks like a young boy. And it's not only that Krishna just looks like a young boy. He has the mentality of a young boy. Ajam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Chak. So he's the oldest, but he has the mood of a young boy. So I think all of us in this room are all older than 15, right? We don't have any children here. So you remember what you were like when you were 15, 16? So the men, you remember when you were a 15, 16-year-old boy? What was your mood? That's like Krishna's mood. Very playful. He likes adventure. Even as Vishnu, he likes adventure. You know, he rides around the universe standing up on this big eagle. Wouldn't that be fun? Okay. He likes to do all kinds of adventurous things. We're just reading yesterday about the story of Kurma. So, you know, the demigods and the demons go to Lord Vishnu, and they, actually, for demigods just went, and they say, you know, the demons are being victorious. And Lord Vishnu says, why don't you declare a truce? And you can get together with them to churn the ocean of milk. So they go to the demons, and the demons said, yeah, it's a really good idea. And they're carrying Mandara Mountain, this golden mountain. But they can't carry it. As they carry it, it slips and even breaks their arms and legs. And then Vishnu shows up on Garuda, you know, and just picks it up with his left hand. All the demigods and the demons together couldn't carry it. You know, he just picks it up, puts it on Garuda, heals everybody. And then they go to the shore of the ocean of milk. I mean, he could just give the demigods nectar, right? He could just say, here it is. Here's your nectar. You know, he likes to do all these activities. He goes to the ocean of milk, and they put the mountain in the ocean, and they wrap the Suki around it. Then Garuda has to leave, so the Suki will feel safe, you know? And then Lord Vishnu goes to the Suki's head with the demigods, and the demons are like, they didn't say anything. They're just kind of, those demigods, you know, they always think they should be at the head. And Lord Vishnu understands their heart, so he just casually walks over to the tail. The demigods follow him, and then the demons go and take the head. Then, of course, there's all this smoke and fire coming out of the head. They get all covered with soot. They're feeling all hot, you know, but they don't want to complain because they don't want to admit that they took the wrong part. And they're churning and churning and churning, and then the mountain starts falling into the ocean. And then the Lord comes as a turtle. And all these incredible things. He comes as a turtle because his back has a little itch, you know. And the mountain's scratching his back. And it also is explained, I think by Lord Kapila, that the reason that the Lord's ornaments, can't remember if it's Lord Shiva or Lord Kapila, that the reason the Lord's ornaments always look shiny is that they're polished by this churning of the mountain. Can you imagine that? You're wearing some jewelry, you know, there's mountains churning on you to polish your jewelry, right? And as he's breathing, it's explained in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, as the Lord is breathing, the ocean tides are also moving. And then they're churning and churning, and then they get tired. It's hard work, you know, tired. And then the Lord, he doesn't just say, okay, just stop, I'll give you the nectar. He enters Vasuki as ignorance, and the demons as passion, and the demigods as goodness, and they all feel enlivened again. Then he sits as Ajita on the top of the mountain to give them energy, and this poison comes out, and all these other things come out. Finally, when the nectar comes out, so remember, you're one of the demigods, and you're churning, and Lord Vishnu said you'd get the nectar, and it finally comes out, and the demons take it. And now what to do? You know, and the Lord Vishnu's already there. He's already there as Ajita. He was there as Korma under the mountain. He's pulling with the demigods. He's on top of the mountain, three forms. He could just take it from the demons. No, he doesn't do that. He shows up as a woman. And they go, okay, whatever you want. And then she just takes the nectar and gives it all. She says, oh, you're all so intelligent. You just sit here. I'll be right back. And she gives it all to the demigods. So many wonderful stories like this. So this is, Krishna has this mood of a young boy, that's my point. Young boy likes adventure. I was just reading about the fight with Jarasandhar. And Jarasandhar attacks because he's so angry that Krishna killed Kamsa. He says, Krishna, you killed your relative. Of course, he wasn't angry that Kamsa killed six of his own nephews, newborn babies. That doesn't bother him. But that Krishna kills Kamsa, who had imprisoned Krishna's mother and father for so many years, probably a total of about 9 years. That, he said, oh, he was angry because Kamsa's two wives were his daughters. And so he had to take care of his widowed daughters. So he attacks Mathura. And Krishna's fighting so heroically, there's a river of blood. And the elephants and the horses and the soldiers, they look like islands and trees floating in this river. So very heroic young man. He once likes to be heroic, likes to have adventure, intrigue. When Indra's sending the rain, Krishna doesn't just like Chavana Muni, when Indra was angry because Chavana Muni gave the Ashwini Kumaras the right to drink Somaras. So Indra was going to hurt the Ashwini Kumaras, and Chavana Muni just paralyzes Indra's arm. So when Indra's pouring all the rain, Krishna doesn't just paralyze his arm. He could just go neutralize the clouds. No, he wants some drama. He wants to lift the mountain. So not only does Krishna look young, he has this mood of youth. It's this very playful mood. It often says krida, play. You know, we would like to do that, but none of us can do that. We end up having to work. We can't just play all day. Of course, people try. They try when the boss is out of the room, they put on some video game on their computer, you know, and try to keep playing. But for us, we get old and life becomes hard work and tapasya. Even when you're a child, you have to go to school so many things. Krishna finished all his schooling in 2 months. And he had a fun school also. He had a really fun school. He learned how to just play musical instruments underwater and read other people's minds. We're thinking to start a school like this here in Vrindavan. What do you think? People always want a Vedic school, so a really Vedic school. They learn how to be a civil engineer. They learned how to dye and set hair. What else did they learn to do? How to solve mathematical puzzles. Anyway, that was his school. He did that only in 2 months. And he's always just playing. Even when he's fighting with Chandura and Mastika, or he's fighting with Aristosaurus, just play. So he doesn't grow old, and it doesn't deteriorate in any way. And Prabhupada said he's like the sun, always in his own place. He's not affected by anything. He doesn't become affected by his circumstances. For us, we become affected. If I don't have anything to eat for a long time, I can't think very well. If I don't sleep, like Prabhupada says, without sleep, you can't have any intelligence. If you haven't had enough sleep, if you haven't had enough food, you can't think straight, isn't it? We make mistakes. Or if somebody insults us or yells at us, we lose our intelligence. Can't think straight anymore. We say something foolish, do something foolish. I mean, oh, why did I do that? Krishna's not affected by anything. He's above everything. Why? Because he's the controller of everything. This verse actually reminds me in many ways of the 529, Bhoktaram Yagatap Sam Sarvalokamahesham Subhadam Sarvabhutanam Yatvamam Shanti Mishati. So Bhoktaram, he's the enjoyer. He's always enjoying. And Ishwara, Bhutanam Ishwaropisam, he's controlling everything. When I take my birth here, I can hardly control even my own life. Anybody here in perfect control of their own life? Exactly. I cannot even control 5 minutes of my life. Just like a couple months ago, I tripped on the stair and broke my foot. I didn't want to do that. It just happens. Things just happen. You make your plans, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And you're lucky if the whole day your plans work out. That's an amazing day, isn't it? If you make a list at the beginning of the day, this is what I'm going to do, and at the end of the day, you actually did everything on the list. But Krishna's controlling everything. And not even a blade of grass can move without his sanction. And not only that, Atma Mayaya. He's the friend. So we generally have experience in this world that someone who's unaffected, controlling, they're a little scary. Isn't it? People who are big controllers, people who have a lot of power. They say power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. We've even seen it in our ISKCON movement, unfortunately. Many of you who've been around our ISKCON movement for a long time. So you've seen that some people, they've gotten some power, they've become a little controller. Isn't it? Little controller. Controlling 1,000 people, 4 temples. And they think, oh, okay, now let me enjoy. Let me exploit and enjoy. And so many people become hurt. So generally, if someone's a controller, then we think, oh, scary person. Don't give people too much power. The whole move towards democracy in the modern world is not to give anyone too much power. Democracy is not just about elections. It's about not having anybody with too much power. This idea of division of power. You have the executive branch, the judicial branch, the legislative branch, and the people can't stay in charge for too long. They can only stay for a certain amount of time, because they think if someone gets too much power, they'll abuse it. But here, Atmamayan, very much like Suridam, that Krishna is full of love. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on this. It's like the love of a mother. Of course, modern society, We may not understand this because in modern society the mothers are even killing their children. Right? Killing their children, abandoning their children. So now when you talk about the love of a mother, I'm always thinking maybe half the people in the room will go, oh, you don't know my mother. Right? But in a normal society, even the mother animals generally, they're kind to their children. Even the mother monkeys, the mother dogs, and they are taking care of their children. And Krishna is more kind than millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of mothers. That kind of love. Right? Even an ordinary mother will give her life for her child. Even an animal mother will sacrifice her life for her child. So we don't have to worry, although Krishna is so powerful, still he's our best friend. He's benevolent. In fact, Krishna has no envy. He's no malice. He doesn't even have any envy or malice towards those who are envious of him. So generally, if someone's envious of me, if somebody hates me, if somebody wants to destroy me, if somebody hurts me, then I usually desire some pain for that person. And Krishna doesn't desire pain even for his enemies. So when we meditate on all these qualities of Krishna, how he's, although he appears to be born and grow up, then he has extraordinary activities, that he's the friend of everyone, that he's the controller of everything. And I have some cough drops somewhere. Yes, I don't. As we meditate how Krishna's like that and how he's our best friend, this inspires us to love Krishna and to serve him. We have to be inspired. Otherwise, why should I serve Krishna? Better to just be independent in this world. And then we think, yes, maybe I want to surrender to Krishna. Maybe I'd like to enter into his pastimes. Maybe I'd like to devote my life to him. And as we enter into that mood, as our desire to serve Krishna increases, then we also regain our own transcendental position. Actually, mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We're all like Krishna to a small degree, but we're all like Krishna. Prabhupada says in the fight between Krishna and Jambavan that Krishna has all the inclinations of an ordinary person. So when I see how wonderful Krishna is, I think, you know, I'd like to be like that. Not as a competitor, but as a servant. I would like to also regain my godly qualities. So questions, comments, corrections, subtractions, additions? Yes.
Is envy among devotees? Is envy among devotees is good or bad?
Is envy among devotees good or bad? Well, there is a spiritual counterpart of envy, which is friendly competition, sporting competition. Just like if you're playing some sporting game with your friends, and you love your friends, you're trying to win, but if your friends win, you're also happy. Like that. But if actual envy, no, that's very bad. That's the root of our disease. Actual envy is, I want to take what the other person has. I want to put them down in some way. I want to discredit them. I want to take it. If I can't take it, at least I don't want them to have it. Prabhupada gives the example. You hear that your childhood friend has become a high court judge, and you say, oh, I don't believe it. He was so foolish in school. How could he be a high court judge? No, tell you, he's high court judge. Ah, well, then he must not be getting paid. So that's envy. Prabhupada says everyone should appreciate the service of everyone else. He says that is Vaikuntha thinking. In Vaikuntha, the birds stop their singing to listen to the bees. So normally we think the birds are singing very nicely and the bees' sound is not so pleasing. But the birds appreciate the buzzing of the bees and the fragrant, beautiful flowers. They're appreciating Tulsi. From a material point of view, Tulsi is not like a rose or a gardi, but they're appreciating. Oh, she's the favorite of Krishna. So there's no envy. But there's some competition. Prabhupada says without competition, there's no life. But it's more inspiration. Oh, that devotee's doing something wonderful. Oh, let me do something wonderful for Krishna too. But the cowherd boys, they're running. I'm going to touch Krishna first. No, I'll touch Krishna first. No, I'll touch Krishna.
Also, Krishna's special. We must be special too.
Well, the cowherd boys thought this way after many times, but one time in particular, after Krishna swallowed the second forest fire, when the cows, goats, and buffalo were all, when they wandered away and they got stuck in the sharp sugar canes and a fire came around them. And as they were walking back to Bandirava, right, they were surrounded by fire. And so it was about, they were about 15 kilometers from Bandirava. And Krishna told them to close their eyes, and they closed their eyes, and then he swallowed the forest fire. He told them to close their eyes because he was thinking, if they see me swallowing the fire, they'll be very upset. They might think I'm getting hurt, so they'll run in the fire to save me. And it's explained that Krishna had a thirst for fire, like some people like spicy food. They took me to the devotee restaurant in Kolkata. I said, do you have anything that's not spicy? You know, their idea of not spicy. I was like, but Krishna likes, not only does Krishna want spicy food, he wants to eat real fire, not just some chili peppers. So he wanted to drink the fire, but he thought the boys, they won't understand. And the boys were wondering, why is Krishna asking me to close our eyes? Why is Krishna asking us to close our eyes? They said, probably he knows some, this is all from the commentators, said probably he knows some magic, a special mantra or special gems that he doesn't want us to see. He wants to keep it secret. So he doesn't want us to see how he's doing it. Then when they opened their eyes, not only was there no fire, they were back in Bandirvan, under the banyan tree, 15 kilometers. And they were really thirsty. You know, if you're surrounded by fire, you're really thirsty. They were all really thirsty, and there was the Yamuna. There's the Yamuna, there's the banyan tree. I said, wow, Krishna's really something. Yeah, we're his friends. We must be really something too. That's what they were thinking like that. Sanatana Goswami explains in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that each cowherd boy thinks, I'm Krishna's favorite. And he says, each cowherd boy is Krishna's favorite. Now, from a material point of view, favorite means there's only one. What's your favorite color? You ask a little child, what's your favorite color? They'll say, well, pink and gold and green. He said, no, no, just one. But actually, each devotee is Krishna's favorite. So devotees have that. Yes, I'm Krishna's favorite. Each queen is thinking, Krishna just stays with me all the time. He never goes to the other queen's houses. He's just with me. Yeah, there's that sense. So that, there. But it's loving. It's loving. And as I can compare it to, you know, you're playing some game with your friends. You're trying to win, but if they win, you're also happy because they're your friends. You don't become angry. You don't try to cheat your friends. So you'll win. Is that okay? Anything else? Yes. Yes.
Kansa was envious of Lord Krishna, but he was always thinking Krishna, and he got perfection. If somebody is envious of a pure devotee, what will be the result?
Oh, very nice question. There's one place where Prabhupada answers this. He says, any contact with the pure devotee will eventually bring perfection, but if that contact is offensive, first you have to be purified of those offenses. Prabhupada also explained this in Hawaii with reference to chanting Hare Krishna. He said, if you're chanting with offenses, first you have to clear the offenses. So by chanting, but it may take 700 lifetimes. And it's always a risk. You know, because if you're envious of a pure devotee, that can act like the mad elephant that destroys all of your... So that's a risky way. That's not the recommended way. Yam krodha kama sahaja panayati bitti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevi bhava sanchin chachasam sadhrachim tanam operate. Yes, possible. There was one devotee, Gajendra. You all know the story of Gajendra? So he had been a great king, I think, Indrajuna. He was meditating, he had become Vanaprastha, he was meditating. And he didn't receive one guest properly, and the guest cursed him, he became an elephant. And in his elephant body, he was bathing in the river, and one crocodile grabbed his foot. And Gajendra was in a lot of pain. You could imagine a crocodile grabs your foot, it was really hurt. And he couldn't eat, so he was getting very weak. He was there for 1,000 years. In a lot of pain. And he just wanted relief. Gajendra is given as the example, Rupa Goswami gives him as the example of a devotee who goes to Krishna in distress. So that's the neophyte devotee. Four neophyte devotees. He's a neophyte devotee. And this crocodile is biting his foot. So when Lord Vishnu comes to save Gajendra, he also saves the crocodile. And Prabhupada explains in one lecture why Vishnu saved the crocodile. He said because he was touching the foot of a Vaishnava. But this is not recommended. And even he was a neophyte Vaishnava. You touch the foot even of a Kanista devotee, you get the good result. But please don't bite the feet of the devotee. This is not our recommended process. And Krishna did liberate him, but by cutting off his head. So, not risky. Very risky. So don't go that route. Yes, but eventually I think he also took contact with Krishna. Someone else has some? Yes, you with the glasses.
Just a short question. You said Krishna is the friend of everyone?
Yes. Yeah.
And Prabhupada said that the enemies of Krishna, sometimes they get eternal position on Krishna's body. So can you explain this eternal?
I don't know if that means it literally. You know, there's many places in the Shastra where absolute words are not used absolutely. In every language it's like that. If I say, oh, that person always comes to the temple, it doesn't mean 24/7 they're sitting in the temple. Or if I say, oh, he never comes to the temple, maybe he comes on Janmashtami. So Shastra also is using many times absolute words and not absolutely. Because what we hear other places is that those who merge into Krishna's body or those who merge into the Brahma Jyoti, they don't stay. It's not an eternal position. I don't know more than that. I'd have
so
to.
It's the same.
That's all I can suggest. I can't give you some definitive answer. We'd have to look, where does Prabhupada say that? What is the context? Look at the commentaries. What is Prabhupada saying that in reference to? I just know that there's other things said in other places. Whenever you have in the same thing, different things said in different places, you have to look at the whole picture. Is that okay?
We hear that the root of our material disease is envy, We also hear that the main cause of bondage in this world is attraction to the fair sex. How are these related?
That's such a nice question, and it's very easy to answer. Because Krishna is the original Purusha. Purusha means male, he's the enjoyer. All of us are enjoyed, so we are all Prakriti. You're all Krishna's energy. Even those who have an eternal form as male, their mood is that Krishna is enjoying them. Of course, it says that the devotees often enjoy more than the Lord. That's natural. The parents want to give the children better food or a better education than they had. You know, it's explained that when Mother Yasoda goes in the kitchen to get some more food, Krishna takes all the his favorite preparations of the devotees off of his plate and he gives to the devotees. Or Prabhupada tells how the coward boys, they go to the forest with just chapatis and rice, and Krishna goes with kachoris and samosas. And when they get there, they switch. Krishna gives his friends the kachoris and he takes the chapatis. But still, Krishna is the enjoyer. So the desire to enjoy the world, to be the lord of Prakriti, that is our essential envy. I want to be the lord, the enjoyer of Prakriti, and Prakriti manifests as female. So those of us who have, of course we've switched, I'm sure you had a female body in some lifetime, and I'm sure I've had a male body in some lifetime. We switch how we want to enjoy Prakriti. All of us have been probably both men and women in different lifetimes. But woman, when you're in a woman's body, it means you want to enjoy Prakriti to a greater extent. You want to be the owner of Prakriti. So I want to own in my own body. You may want to own in your wife's body. So, greater desire. We're all trying to be like that. The lord of Prakriti, the enjoyer. Prakriti in general. I want to be the lord of the earth. I want to use all the resources of the earth. The earth is Krishna's wife. I want to use these resources of the earth for my own purposes. All of the things we want to enjoy are all opulences. Opulences mean street or Shri. Who is Shri? Radharani. I am wanting to enjoy Radharani, basically. Like Ravana. If I want to enjoy beauty, I want to enjoy wealth, I want to enjoy fame, I want, what am I trying to enjoy? As soon as I want to enjoy that separately from Krishna, I'm envious. Let me take it. Does that make sense, or you're still not sure? You look like you're still processing. Is that at least logical? Trying to enjoy like that is not very satisfying. After a while, Prabhupada says, you become baffled and say, you know, this isn't working very well. I'm really not the lord of Prakriti. This is not working. I'm really not a very good god. I can't do it. I can't be the enjoyer. Nature just doesn't cooperate with me. Because I'm not her husband. If you try to capture some other man's wife against her will, she probably won't cooperate with you. She'll just fight you. Instead of getting some enjoyment, you'll just get scratches and bites and hit over the head, and then you'll be in jail. And you know, it'll just be, then everybody will criticize you. Nobody will want to look at that man. He tried to rape somebody's wife. So that's what we're trying to do. Let me take your opulences and be you. But the opulences are a person and they don't cooperate. She says, no, sorry. I don't belong to you. I belong to Krishna. And so we become baffled. She doesn't cooperate with us. Of course, if we want to use her in Krishna's service, that's a whole different thing. Then she becomes very cooperative. And then we're in our natural position and then we're happy. So if you want to use Prakriti in Krishna's service, then that's very nice. Anything else? When am I supposed to stop? Am I past my time? Yes. Should I stop now, or should I take another question, or what?
Well, there's more questions, but I think it's okay.
It's okay. She's in charge. If any of you have felt that I've gone past my time and you want to just discreetly leave, we'll all just laugh at you on the way out. It's okay. Does someone else have another question? Yes.
You said that the love of Krishna can surpass the love of millions of mothers. Mm-hmm. So how can we understand it personally for us, how Krishna is loving us?
How can we understand that personally?
Like millions of mothers in that context.
Mm-hmm. It's right there, it's just that we've turned away from it. I mean, one easy way to meditate on Krishna's love is just even to look at the blessings in your own life. Try to see ways in which Krishna is demonstrating his love for you in your life. I mean, after all, we're prisoners. We're thieves and prisoners and envious of Krishna. You know, in the normal government, people put into the prison house, do they get flowers? You ever heard of any government putting flowers in the prison? We have flowers. We don't have to have flowers. The world could go on without flowers. There are many plants that reproduce without fragrant, beautiful flowers, isn't it? They're not absolutely essential for plant reproduction. So why is Krishna giving us flowers? And he's so nice that when we just start chanting Hare Krishna, even we're chanting Nama Bharat, and we're offending the devotees left and right, and we're so envious, he gives us roses to wear. I mean, how many people in the world wear roses? At least where I come from in America, people don't walk around wearing flowers, except in Hawaii. Right? Most people in their life, they've never worn flowers. I mean, India, they wear flowers. So how nice he is. Or in the prison, they don't give the prisoners very nice food, isn't it? There was one news story in the last year. There was a prison warden in one state, I think Arkansas, in America. And the way the law was, there's a certain amount of money to feed the prisoners. But if there was extra money, the warden could keep it in his own pocket. That was the law. Crazy law. So, of course, the man tried to feed the prisoners as little as possible. And they were literally starving. They had all lost so much weight, they were all skinny, but he hadn't broken any law, you know. Anyway, my point is that generally you don't feed the prisoners very nice food. So look at what Krishna's given us. Look at all the variety of food that Krishna's given us. Do we need all this variety to live? And variety of the variety. So think how many different kinds of fruits there are. How many different varieties of fruits? There's apples, pears, peaches, plums, mangoes, papaya, grapes, cherries, strawberries, pineapple. A long list if we were going to have our, if we had some primary school students, list all the kinds of fruits. And then there's varieties of varieties. So there's 40 kinds of mangoes, and there's 40 kinds of apples, and there's 40 kinds of bananas, and there's 40 kinds of grapes. Do we need that to live? We're prisoners. All the variety of colors. So many things. Well, this is all evidence that Krishna is loving. You can start meditating on like that. Well, this is one of our main reasons we don't surrender to Krishna. We're afraid. If I surrender to Krishna, he may hurt me. That's one of the reasons why we meditate. Atmamaya, he's full of mercy, he's full of love. He's coming out of love. Why we meditate on, why we study the Shastra. So we gradually can get some faith. All right? Anybody else? Yes. Oh, Parvati.
So does that mean that if we don't get all those facilities, we shouldn't continue loving Krishna?
Well, that happens, though. That happens. Sometimes people have something in their life that's not very nice. Everybody has something in their life that's not very nice. I met one devotee who told me she had a perfect life. But generally, I don't know, I've asked thousands of devotees. Any of you have a perfect life? Okay.
Perfectly intense.
Perfectly intense, yes. But still one loves Krishna. Actually, it's very interesting. We were just, the verse we were speaking on in Mayapur, Devahuti was saying that Krishna's desires are unobstructed. There's never any obstruction. And there's one nice conversation where Prabhupada says, pure devotion means that even if there's obstructions, you still love. That's real love. If I say, I love you only if the circumstances are very nice, that's not love. That's business.
So
yeah.
Krishna, the devotee, sees
everything is
loving. Everything. Sees the hand of Krishna in everything.
And sees everything as loving. So the devotee sees even the most terrible things in life is loving. Like Maharaj Parikshit, he saw that Krishna had taken the form of Sringi's curse. So normally, you know, he was a young man and he was the emperor of the world and he was using it in Krishna's service. So if you're the emperor of the world and you're young and you're using everything in Krishna's service and all of a sudden you're going to die in a week, you see that is that Krishna's taken that form out of kindness. So that's... Lord Brahma says, if you, as soon as you see like that, then immediately your liberation is guaranteed. As soon as you see. But you can start at the beginning, you can start to see Krishna's kindness in the so-called good things. Start to see like that. That's a beginning place. But you want to come to the point that you see everything is Krishna's kindness. That's not always easy. It's not always easy. But at least if you can say, Krishna, I don't know why you're doing this, but you know, I'm going to trust you and I love you anyway. I'm going to trust that you know more than me. I mean, after all, the children don't always appreciate the way the parents show their love and the way the parents take care of the children, isn't it? Sometimes the children think, why are my parents making me suffer in this way? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.